that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rutland Federal Credit Union, Anderson McQuaid Architectural Molding, Cleveland Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Good evening. I am Dan Shaughnessy, sitting in for Tony Maserati on the Baseball Reporters, where the number is 617-779-0985, and you are encouraged to call. And we're going to get right to it out of the gate here. Red Sox are in St. Petersburg at the Trop Dome, and so is Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. Pete, how are you?
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing okay here, filling in for Maz on the Baseball Reporters. Nice to have some boots on the ground there at the Trop Dome, and tell me what you got. What's your pregame news going on down there?
Well, it's actually been an interesting pregame. The Red Sox have won six in a row and scored 40 runs, and manager John Farrell decided to shake up his lineup, which is kind of interesting. They dropped Mookie Betts down to fourth. They got Eduardo Nunez batting leadoff. Dustin Pedroia is back in the lineup. He's the DH. So some shifting going on despite all the winning and trying to, I think, put guys maybe, at least in terms of Mookie Betts, maybe in a spot where he can start to do some damage, which he hasn't done since the All-Star break. I think this is something they're hoping will get Mookie going a little bit.
Pete, what do you think goes into the Pedroia as DH and Nunez as your second baseman? What's going into that?
Well, for now, it's two things. Pedroia is obviously coming back off that knee injury, and they're trying to work him back slowly. And this is a way to get his bat in the lineup without exposing that left knee to, you know, more wear and tear playing second base. Especially here at Tropicana Field with the turf and everything else. The second part of it is Hanley Ramirez had a good workout day today and probably won't be back in the lineup until tomorrow. He's missed a few games with oblique strains. So this was a way to get Pedroia in the lineup as a DH at least one more time before Hanley comes back. And at the same time, keep Eduardo Nunez in the lineup. Obviously, he's been one of their best hitters in this recent streak.
I know that they have a righty going tonight. Austin Pruitt is 6-2 with a 5.65 going for the Rays tonight. Tomorrow's pitcher for them, is he right-handed or left-handed?
Tomorrow's Odorizzi, so a righty.
Okay. I'm just wondering, what would you think would have happened if Hanley had been ready today? How do you think this thing would have played out with the lineup and with the positions?
Yeah, you know, they're going to have some decisions to make here coming forward. They're probably going to face two lefties in the Yankee series, so that'll be the first time some of these decisions will come due, I think. Because with Pedroia back, they essentially have an extra player.
Yep.
You know, what are you going to do now? With Hanley, he's going to be back. You know, he's going to play first or DH. You got Pedroia's back, he's going to be the second baseman. You got Xander Bogaerts. You got Rafael Devers. Now you also have Eduardo Nunez. You got to figure out a way to play him. You know, he's obviously been one of the keys to this whole thing. So Nunez, I asked Farrell today about him playing left field.
And sure.
Nunez doesn't want to play left field. They don't think that's a good place for him. He hasn't played a lot of left field this year. So he's either going to play second, short, or third. So they're going to have to figure some things out, pick days for certain guys to get days off, maybe against matchups that aren't beneficial to them. The lefty-righty thing will play into it. They'll have to do some maneuvering around, and that's probably going to be at first base to some degree. You'll see Hanley maybe more often at first base. They'll give Dustin, I think, more days off than people are accustomed to because they want to keep his knee in at least some kind of shape heading into the stretch run here. So there's going to be days when he's going to get a day off when you're going to think, well, why are they giving him a day off? But that's, I think, largely going to be for physical maintenance reasons. So that's something I think fans are going to have to keep an eye on, that there's going to be times when you're going to say, geez, he's, you know, 8 for his last 15. Why is he getting a day off? And that's going to be why.
We're talking to Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, who's down at the Trop Dome with the Red Sox. Pete, did you envision Devers sitting against the lefties in New York at all?
Well, you know, when he first got called up, that was something they talked about, that they were going to use him against righties and kind of see where that went. And that quickly went to he's going to be in the lineup every day because of how well he's been hitting. Now, what's going to change, obviously, over time is teams are going to get more of a book on him. This will be the second time around the Yankees have seen him. So you'll start to see pitchers adjust to him, and there's going to come, whether it's this Yankee series coming up or at some point soon, it'll probably benefit him to get a day off against certain pitchers. And that'll obviously enable them to use Eduardo Nunez at third base, which was a lot of their intention when they traded for him, and he has yet to play there. So I think whether it's Devers, whether it's Pedroia, you're going to see at some point they're going to have to make some adjustments because of the pitching. And Devers and Benintendi are two guys who might end up out of the lineup against certain lefties.
Pete, I've got a little confusion regarding Hanley. Not that that's a new thing for either of us, but they're using the word oblique, and there's not a disabled issue. You're talking about him being ready tomorrow. So is there a mild oblique? What's going on with this thing?
Well, he had originally it was a strain on one side, and he tried to play through it, and then during that game he had a strain on his other side. So they decided to, it was not a DL kind of thing. It was something where they felt a couple days would be okay. The team had the day off yesterday, which played into it, because they've been pretty liberal, and most teams have, with using the 10-day DL. You know, it's so much different than 15. So it doesn't seem like it was that serious a thing. And today they did something they've done with most of their guys who have come back from injuries. The day that the guy says he's ready, they give him another day just to work out on the field before they activate him. Now, a lot of this goes into, yeah, they've won six in a row. They've been scoring a ton of runs. They have the extra player now in the lineup. I think if they had lost six in a row and they weren't scoring runs, you'd probably see Haley, you know, playing as a DH and in cleanup. So I think part of this is they're kind of playing with some house money here with the way they've been playing lately.
So we know that the Yankees are coming up Friday. They go to New York, and they're going to play them 10 times in 23 days. And they did some maneuvering to get Sale into all three of those series. But I was a little bit confused regarding Fister pitching against Cleveland on Monday. Did they have to make some adjustments there, or was that the normal turn?
Well, you know, that was supposed to be a day off, you know, and that's the makeup game of the rain out when Cleveland was in town last. So Fister was going to be the guy who was going to get skipped, because that would have been a day off, and they've had the day off on Monday, and they got a day off coming up on Thursday. And they don't want to give, you know, Sale or Pomerantz or Porcello, you know, pitching on 8 or 9 days rest or something like that. So they made the move to put Sale in there every 5 days, starting, you know, after this turn today. That'll get him in there against the Yankees in those series. And Fister for now is going to stay in, because David Price, you know, obviously is not coming back anytime soon. So with that, when that makeup game got scheduled, that enabled them to at least temporarily, you know, for this turn, at least not skip Fister.
That makes sense. We're talking to Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, who was on the ground at the Trop Dome for tonight's Red Sox game. Pete, with the bullpen, which, you know, we know they have, I saw you write this in your notes today in the Red Sox, the 14 innings of scoreless ball against the White Sox. And, hey, we can't punish them for doing their job against the White Sox. We know it's the White Sox, but that's still 14 innings of shutout ball. How do you see it going forward regarding, let's say it's a Pomerantz game and he's done after six, how do you see the pitchers being deployed after that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we were talking to Farrell about that today, and they have, if you look at who their late inning guys are, obviously Kimbrel is the ninth inning. Now they have Addison Reed, they have Matt Barnes, and they have Joe Kelly. Those are their other high leverage guys who you would see in the seventh inning or the eighth inning. In the past, Farrell has always wanted to have a quote unquote eighth inning guy, somebody that's set up to pitch that eighth inning and get the ball to the closer. What he's done since getting Addison Reed is kind of flipped that a little bit. And they're going to use Addison Reed in the highest leverage situation, whether it's the seventh inning or the eighth inning. So if the other team has their better hitters coming up in the seventh inning, they'll go to Reed and then use Barnes or Kelly in the eighth inning. Also, if the other team has some good runners coming up, guys who can steal a base, they'll use Reed then, because Reed is the guy who holds runners on the best. He's very quick to the plate. Barnes is not as quick to the plate, neither is Kelly. So they're using the bullpen how they should use the bullpen. You know, put the best guy in against the best hitters late in the game. That's what makes the most sense. But oftentimes teams don't do that, because guys get caught up in wanting to have a certain role. Now, the fact that Reed came here in the middle of the season and he didn't have a role with the Red Sox, I think it's easier for a manager to say, I'm going to use you either in the seventh or the eighth inning. And a guy like Reed is not going to complain about that, because he hasn't had a role that's being taken from him. So this is a good way to, I think, maximize what's become a pretty deep bullpen at this point. And if you don't have necessarily an eighth inning guy, you know, it could be Barnes, it could be Brandon Workman, it could be Kelly, it could be Reed. And that allows you to not burn one guy out 3 days in a row. You can mix and match those guys over those two innings.
And today's the first day you got to Farrell since Sunday. He didn't talk yesterday, didn't have to. Is there any news on David Price?
He threw today, actually, in the outfield here at Tropicana Field, and threw from 60 feet, threw on nearly 30 pitches, obviously just on, you know, the flat ground, not off the mound. So this is part of the progression, that he's, you know, playing catch. Watching him throw, he was pretty firm. I mean, it wasn't lobbing it. You know, he was throwing the ball with some effort. So the thing about this stuff is until he starts getting out to 100 feet, 120 feet, and really testing the strength of his arm, that'll be the step before he gets on a mound. And then it'll have to be a couple of mound sessions before he faces hitters. And I think he's been out so long at this point that they'd want him to get at least one minor league game. So you're talking, you know, at the outset, a good 2 weeks at least before you'd see him in a big league game. So this is not going to be an overnight thing. You know, you'll see him next week or anything like that. What's given them the ability to do this and take their time with it is where they are in the standings and the fact that Pfister's pitched well his last couple. So if Pfister, I think, hadn't pitched as well, you know, they'd be in a different situation. But they've got the luxury of having five starters, and even with Price on a DL. And if they can do it the right way, he could be back maybe at the beginning of September feeling good instead of rushing back and maybe being compromised.
Boy, that's really interesting stuff. I appreciate that. All right, Pete, you've done a good job bringing us up to date on the Red Sox from Tropicana Dome. Thank you for checking in. Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter's Tony Maserata show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Where the number is 617-779-0985. Jump on and talk about the Sox or anything in baseball if you want to. And the first guy we're going to take is Matt in Worcester. You are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Matt. How are you?
Look, you look at the Sox last six games. Guess what? They're all W's. And you know what? That's no. You got to give credit to John Farrell, the most handsome coach in baseball. Just look at the guy. He's a drop-dead gorgeous. Distracts the other pitchers. What are they going to do?
All good points. Anything else, Matt? Yeah. Didn't think he was.
I don't know that Matt had a real serious point to go with there.
Yeah, he kind of waited a while to unload on that. Anyway, the number is, if you want to do better, it's 617-779-0985. Shaughnessy, along with Marshall Hook, in place of Tony Maz, and Nick from Rhode Island. You are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Hey, Dan, I have a more serious take.
Thank you.
I think that you don't know anything about baseball, and you're a loser, and I don't like you.
That's all you got?
Wow.
Nick, please help us with more. We are 0-for-2 on calls so far. This is the mistake you made.
You know, here's the thing about these callers. I'm going to go ahead and analyze them for a little bit, because I honestly think, like that last guy, if he really didn't like you and thought you didn't know anything, you would have that conversation with
him. Bring it on, absolutely.
But he's too much of a wuss to actually have that conversation with
you. That would have been good. All right, let's give it another shot here. 617-779-0985. Shaughnessy and Hook filling in for Maz on the Baseball Reporters. We're 0-for-2. I don't know. Let's try. Okay, I'm going to take a shot here. Jimmy, I can't tell who's who here. Just call up somebody.
They're being screened as we speak, Dan.
Oh, they're being screened as we speak?
We're not doing live callers on the air. We're not doing that.
Oh, okay. We're screening. Good. How about Carl from Grafton? Does Carl want to jump on?
Hey, Dan. How you doing?
Good.
Pleasure to talk to you. Just want to know what your take is as we push towards the end here. I'm a Yankee fan, but love to see the Sox and the Yankees have a good rivalry, because since the Sox won, that's really what made it a rivalry instead of one-sided like it was. So I just kind of wonder what your take is. I'll hang up. Because, I mean, I think the Yankees have 10 games left with the Red Sox.
Yes.
And they're only three up. So just I want to hear your take. I'll hang up. Thanks, Dan.
No, I think it's a good point, because the Yanks have outplayed them. I think the Yanks are 6-3 against the Sox this year. The Yanks are 2 games back in the loss column, 3 games overall. You are correct. It's 10 more meetings in a 23-day stretch, which starts on Friday. Sale's going to pitch in all three series. I thought the Red Sox had left them in the rearview mirror like a couple of weeks ago, and the Yanks had another dip subsequent to that, but the Sox have not been able to put them away just yet. So we're still kind of hanging on to see where it goes. And I don't know. The Sox have to do better within the division. They're 21-22 against the division. The only team they have owned is Toronto. They are under 500 against the other three teams in the division, so let's see if they can do better. Greg from Lincoln, you are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Dan, I just want to talk to you. You wrote in a column a couple of weeks ago that the likelihood of the Red Sox meeting the Dodgers in the World Series, and it's starting to come to fruition a little bit. You know, I got to say, Puig's hitting, and they're finally getting the bats going in L.A., you know, and they're running away with it. Now the Red Sox just have to take care of business. And I feel good. I feel like with Petey back and guys like Devers, you know, I feel like they just need the Yanks to kind of implode, like you were saying, and they got this in the bag.
Well, the Red Sox, I think, are one of the three best teams in the American League. I think that, you know, I think Cleveland's better, even though they haven't played better to this point. Houston has played better to this point. You know, they're 71-40, so they've certainly been a machine so far. I'm not sure they're as well built for the playoffs. I think Boston has a good chance to be certainly in the ALCS, and that gives you a shot to be in the World Series. So we're going to find out. They got to do better this year in the best of five. That first round crushed them last year, three close losses to the Indians, and it's all over just like that. Need to do better. Chad from Nashua, you are next on the Baseball Reporters with Dan Shaughnessy and Marshall Hook.
Hey, Shaughnessy, honestly, I think you're great, so don't listen to those other
thank you. I feel better. I really needed that.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. But you kind of just hit the nail on the coffin. So, like, when it comes to the playoffs, I don't know that we can really trust our starting pitching. I mean, who do you really trust for your four starters? And can you really actually, like, rely on them when it comes to that? Like, our bullpen is deep, and, I you know, that might be exactly what we need come time for the playoffs. But like you said, we lost three close games to Cleveland last year when we should have gone to the ALCS. Everyone thought we would beat them. So I don't get how people are so sure that we're going to do great this year and actually make it. And, you know, I'll hang up and listen to your thoughts.
It's a fair question. They do not have a starting pitcher who has won a game in the postseason, and that precludes Pfister, who has done it, but I don't expect him to be part of the rotation when they get there. Although you never know with guys getting hurt. The Price thing, I think, is really interesting right now. We know he's had 8 or 9 postseason starts, no wins as a starter in the postseason. He's got a big monkey on his back. And Porcello has 3 postseason starts and no victories, including the stink bomb last year in Cleveland when he gave up all the home runs to the Tribe. So they're going to be lugging some baggage out to the mound when they get into that best of five. I think they will get into that, and that's when it's going to be kind of nut-cutting time for the Red Sox starters. We'll see how they react to that. Brian, in the car, you are next on the Baseball Reporters.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey, Brian.
So I just want to give my take on Pedroia. So I know he got activated today, but I don't think there's any need to rush him back. I think they should keep Devers at third, Bogaerts at shortstop, and put Nunez at second, because I think we're going to need Pedroia down the stretch. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, they've been able to do everything you just said tonight because Hanley's not ready to play because of the oblique, and you have a right-handed starter, so they don't have to have Hanley in there. Giving him another day to rest that, and Pedroia is your DH tonight. I find that interesting that you're using Pedroia in that capacity, and it is a little bit of a shakeup. I mean, he's hitting in the 2-hole, Benintendi's 3, Betts is 4. Nunez is your leadoff hitter, so all that stuff intrigues me. I think it's a little bit of a forward thinking by John Farrell. Marshall, what do you got?
Well, I was just going to say, where do you think, let's say Hanley Ramirez was healthy tonight and he was going to be in this lineup, who was sitting in that scenario? Well, what is John Farrell going to do with that?
That's what we tried to get Pete Abraham to commit on that, and again, that scenario could present itself tomorrow. It's another right-hander. Hanley presumably is ready, so you don't know how they're going to do that. I think that's the question. You know, fans want to see Nunez and Devers every day because of the way they've carried, and you got to ride those guys while they're as hot as they are. Pedroia was their hottest hitter in July until he got hurt. So those are three guys that have done the job, and Hanley really hasn't. But when he's ready, it's going to be a tough thing to say, yeah, Hanley, thanks anyway. We don't need you tonight.
That'll he would be the first baseman, right? But I think we know that he can't play first base every day, or at least won't play
like
first base every day.
When he does, he needs a couple of days off afterwards. I don't know where that's going. Let's take one more before the next break. John from Epping, New Hampshire, you are next on the Baseball Show.
Michael, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that Dombrowski, I think he gets a very, very hard time over the fact that, you know, a lot of the guys on the radio say he's never created a bullpen. And the two additions that he made would have been really solid had it not worked out with Carson Smith and Thornburg. Those would have been really solid.
Yeah, but you can't give him points for guys that didn't work out to that degree.
But injuries happen. And the fact that they've done it with smoke and mirrors, it's impressive that they're even this competent.
Okay.
I just think that you can't give the guy a hard time over that. And when people beat him up, it just doesn't make sense.
Well,
the addition of Addison Reed is huge. And going down the stretch, I think he's going to be a difference maker. That's all I had. I just wanted to see what you guys thought about, you know, the fact that if they did have those two relievers, would they be comparable to maybe the Yankees bullpen or some of the better bullpens? What do you think?
Certainly if Carson Smith and Thornburg were doing what they were, you know, brought here to do, it would be a whole different story. I don't know if you'd have gone out and got Addison Reed if you had that situation. But yes, that would be good. But again, I'm not going to give him points for bringing guys in who have been unable to perform because they got hurt. It was something about Carson Smith's delivery that may have contributed to that. The word was out on him. You had to be careful, and they gave up stuff for him.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And we are joined at this moment from Anaheim, California, I believe, by the great Jim Palmer from the Hall of Fame and the Baltimore Orioles, who's out there covering the Orioles as part of the broadcast team. Jim, how are you?
I'm good. It's Orange County. Come on. You know, other than the traffic, weather's perfect. Variable winds blowing out to actually blowing out here. I mean, there's a little bit of wind today, so it's very pleasant. The humidity is gone. The two storms went off towards Hawaii, so everything's good. And the Orioles won last night on the road, so they don't do that often.
6-2. Well, they don't like it when I do too much old-time, old-guy baseball talk here, so I'll try to avoid that. It's hard to do, but I can't...
Well, let's talk about Pedroia getting back in the lineup or something like that.
Yes, well, we are going to do modern current things, but I can't have you on... the great Jim Palmer, three-time Cy Young Award winner, Hall of Famer. Without Don Baylor had a brief stint here, and they went to the World Series in 86. And I know you were an established veteran World Series winner by the time he got to the big leagues. Could you just give us a little bit about Don Baylor as a young player coming up in the Orioles system?
Well, you know, I did win the World Series when I was 20, but then I would tear my rotator cuff at the Emperor Spinatus, and I was kind of in limbo land going between Miami and Elmira and Rochester, you know, the minor league affiliates, hoping that hot showers would actually help my shoulder. And I ended up in instructional league in 1968 in Clearwater, Florida. And, you know, I had rehabbed my the rotator cuff, but I still, I was giving up 10 runs, 14 hits, and I thought my career was over. But on that team was Don Baylor. Yeah. So, again, you spend 7-8 weeks with a young player. And, of course, we had a guy named Roger Freed and, you know, Don Baylor. And, you know, you would go from Clearwater to, down to Sarasota or Dunedin, or you go to Bradenton, so you'd play in all those towns. And, you know, you get to really know somebody. And, you know, and then on Mondays were off day. And we'd always play flag football on the beach. And I'd make sure, because Baylor was, you know, this tremendous physical specimen. I mean, he was a four-tool player. The only thing he couldn't do, and it's been well documented, is throw. Yeah, I mean, he couldn't throw. And I read your comment. I was actually there. My locker was very close to him in Fenway when there was a ball hit. We had a big lead, and, you know, runner tagged up at third. The wind was blowing out at Fenway, and Don kind of made a throw and kind of caught the wind and went straight up in the air. And then Cliff Keen, who wrote for the Globe, used to love to go in and, you know, and do us, because the Orioles, you know, were winning at the time. The Red Sox were going through a downtime, and, you know, but he'd love to agitate. So Earl sent him over to talk to Don Baylor, and he looked at Don, and, you know, Don had this T-shirt on with muscles everywhere, and he goes, he said, yeah, you know what, exactly what they told me. You can't throw a lick. He said, you know, that's the first time I've ever seen a infield fly rule called on a throw from left field here at Fenway. And I'm looking at Don Baylor, and I'm going, is he going to strangle him? Is he going to, you know, whatever? And Don just kind of smiled. And, you know, the interesting thing about him, you know, again, he's a, you know, we traded him for Reggie Jackson and Mike Torres, who had won 20 games for us. We got, we got Reggie Jackson and, Kenny Holzman. But he played the game. I saw Bobby Grich on the field here, and I said, you know, he was a gentle guy, but he played the game with such ferocity. And I can't help but think that part of that came from playing winter ball down in, and I did this in 60, after I left instructional league in 68, I went down and played Frank Robinson, and Frank actually managed down in the San Tercio for a number of years, and Don, I think, the next year went down and played with him. So if you played for Frank Robinson, you know, he had his players play hard. But and Bobby Grich also commented, he said, you know, if you're a middle infielder, he'd knock you on your rear end, breaking up a double play, and then if he saw you at dinner, he'd say hello. Because he played the game fairly, he played it hard. And just, I mean, Dan, think about all the guys he impacted on that, you know, whether you were a teammate, whether you were a fan, whether you were a coach, you know, when he was a manager. He just played the game and respected the game, and You know, I mean, a long career. I mean, I'm a couple of years ago, he was a batting instructor out here and with Mike Socia, and everybody just had so much respect for him. So, you know, and I thought his comments from his wife, you know, because he's fighting leukemia and a blood disorder for like 14 years, and that's kind of the way he played it. Whatever it took to be successful, Don Baylor could figure it out. And again, the gentleness of him, but a little bit like Frank Howard, but, you know, Frank couldn't run the bases like Don did. He stole over 52 bases one year, I think, with Oakland. So he was a marvelous player, and he was just, you know, a guy that you if you were sitting in the other dugout, you'd go, boy, I'd like to have Baylor on my team. And, you know, even though my job when he, you know, got traded was to get him out, I still admire the fact that he was just a terrific player and such a good guy.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, we're talking to Jim Palmer, who's in Anaheim with the Orioles, three-time Cy Young Award winner, Hall of Famer. Jim, have you ever been abused, verbally abused by a player in the form that David Price went after Dennis Eckersley?
Well, maybe not to that extent. You know, years ago, I was doing a Sunday afternoon game. David Segee had played for the Orioles. He had signed a four-year deal, and he, you know, was hurt a lot of that time, but... you know, Sunday afternoon, the ball club is, after the game, is they're going to the West Coast, but again, they're not going to travel to the following day, the off day, and there's a ball hit up the middle, and the second baseman backhands it, and they give it a very tough error. And on the air, I said, well, you know, I don't know if the score is going to do his due diligence, but if he does, you know, if he goes down and talks to the manager, that should have been a base hit. Well, apparently somebody, and this happens all the time if you're a broadcaster, whether you're a Hall of Famer like myself or Dennis Eckersley, somebody says, yeah, Palmer said, you know, that ball should have been an error. Well, actually, I said it should have been a hit. So when the game ends, I'm going early to the West Coast because I'm going to Seattle and then meet the club the following Tuesday in Anaheim playing in a golf tournament for the Hall of Fame with Sparky Anderson. And I come into the locker room because Rick Dempsey's going to give me a ride to the airport. And Terry Crowley, the hitting instructor, says, Cakes, you don't want to go in there. Segee's looking for you. Well, I'm going. I know it's their environment, kind of like the team play with the Red Sox, except that that's how Dennis, you know, was going to get to Toronto. I walk right over to David Segee and I said, do you seem to have a problem with me? You know, I'm hearing that. So he says, you know, all you do is shoot your mouth up there. And I said, well, that's kind of what I get paid for. He said, you know, you called that an error. You said that should have been an error. And I said, no, David, actually, I said it should have been a hit. He said, well, take the first punch, you know, and I looked at him and I know it's, you know, kind of like, you know, it's their plane. You're surrounded by Red Sox, even though, you know, I know Eck would like to have the Red Sox win because he works for him. You're in a hostile environment. And I looked at David and I said, I'm not going to stoop to your level, but I'll tell you one thing. I said, I'll talk to you on Tuesday and I'll give you a chance to apologize. Well, I said, just look at the tape. Well, he looked at the tape. I got it for him, and on Tuesday, he was man enough to apologize.
Wow.
What a novel idea for David Price. I mean, my point is, what good does it do, number one, to confront Eck? Because, you know, I think, doesn't David have a son?
Yes.
You know, you're going to, you know, you grow up as a role model. I mean, I have two daughters. You know, you're always worried about boys taking advantage of when they're growing up, and, you know, and I think girls don't ever trust a guy till he, you know, he earns it. David Price bullied Dennis Eckersley, and I think if anybody's listening, well, how can you bully a Hall of Famer? Well, he knew where he was, what the environment was, and it was a cheap shot. And I can't imagine you can look in the mirror if you're David Price and feel good about doing that. I mean, I'm defending my teammates. Dan, I was watching that game tonight. I only do half the Oriole games, and when Price forgot to cover first base, and it cost him three runs, but the Red Sox, I think, came back with seven, and he pitched eight innings. I bet somebody said, you know, Eck was all over you when you forgot to cover first base. Well, I know exactly what Eck said. He said, hey, big mistake. He said, but hey, it happens. It happened to me. So here's, you know, a Hall of Famer who, you know, was one of the, you know, great starters, even better reliever, et cetera, first ballot Hall of Famer. He's saying, hey, you know what? We make mistakes in the game. Doesn't matter where you end up. And I'm sure somebody said that. And then, you know, I'm flipping channels, and they had to rehab the numbers of Eduardo Rodriguez, who we so graciously gave you for Andrew Miller to rent a couple of months. And, I mean, three runs, nine hits, a home run, five runs. I mean, I don't know if I would have said yuck, but I would have said, ooh, I would have given one of those. And I think X smart enough to know it. You know, rehabs don't always go the way you want them. And, you know, the fact that the more important thing is that he's going to be healthy. But I just can't believe that David Price is not smart enough to realize is that this is not about trying to protect your team out. It's about trying to get people on, you know, on his side, because they're paying him a lot of money to pitch. And, you know, like I said on my Twitter account, hey, mea culpa, apologize, you know, pitch well and move on. And why? And then I saw his apology about 10 days ago going, well, he's gotten better and he's doing this and whatever. Come on. You know, just let it go. The fact is, you made a mistake. Admit it. You're an adult. You're, you know, over 30 years old. You get paid a lot of money to be good. And, you know, the Red Sox fans want him to do well. So, again, I mean, and I read all the articles, both, you know, in the Globe and the Herald and all that about, you know, they ought to boo him and whatever. I mean, that, you know, yeah, he hadn't been good in the postseason. But the Red Sox fans know that if they're going to, it's not going to just be Chris Sale and et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, they want him to do well, and he just needs to move on. And the best way to do it is say, you know what, I lost my head. I'm really sorry. And you know what, mea culpa your way right out of this mess, because that's what it is. It's just a gigantic mess.
Yeah, we would like to hear that. We haven't heard it yet. We will move on. So you see a lot of the American League East. The Orioles are still scuffling to get to 500. Size up the
no,
top.
No, we're at 500, Dan.
That's what? You're at 500? I missed the...
Exactly.
Oh, let's give credit where credit's due. All right, so the four, are they in it? Are they in the wild card thing? And how do you see the American League East shaking out?
Well, they're in the wild card because they're only a game, you know, game and a half out. You know, they're 21 and 33 on the road. Now, I think that's an aberrational number. The Red Sox have the best team. Everybody knows that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, how many times over the course of, you know, the years that we've known each other since, what, back in the 70s, is a team. So I remember when Jimmy Williams was managing the Red Sox, I said, you know, hey, you guys look like you have a pretty good team on paper. He said, you know what they do with paper. They flush it. Well, we all know that, you know, just being good on paper, but the Red Sox are, I mean, they got Addison Reed. Tyler Thornburg could do what he wanted them to do. But at the end of the day, they got a nice ball club. The Yankees have, you know, made some nice acquisitions. But, again, they have a younger ball club. The Red Sox should be the favorites, but the Orioles, you know, again, I mean, I think we're on this West Coast trip. You know, the Angels, you know, Trout's back, et cetera, et cetera. But if you play well out here, I mean, you know, the Angels are a couple games under 500. We're going to face a guy, Parker Bridwell, that we actually gave to him back in April, and he's 5-1, but his numbers, you know, he's not an overpowering guy, but the Orioles are playing better. So I like their chances to at least play well and play better than they have. I mean, they started out 22-10, but then they really hit a tough spot. They had a lot of injuries in the bullpen. Everybody seems to be healthy now. Trumbo is going to come back tomorrow from a little, you know, lat strain. So at the end of the day, they're probably going to be as good as they're going to be all year long, and then it's up to them to play well.
Talking to Hall of Famer Jim Palmer, three-time Cy Young Award winner, who's with the Orioles in Anaheim. Have you seen Chris Sale in person, and how is he doing what he's doing this year?
Well, I mean, he's deceptive. He's got overpowering stuff. He's got, I remember when he was with the White Sox, I'd be talking to Don Cooper. He would go, listen, you know, and he did do a little bit of this last year, back off a little bit, and, you know, be able to add, subtract. I mean, he's the total package. They got themselves a number one starter for a very, 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 very low price, what, $12-13 million a year?
Yep.
I would think they'd probably adjust that contract to be fair to him, considering what Porcello and Price are making. But at the end of the day, I know Ben Cherington made some bad decisions, but they did make some good decisions to have a good enough young players to go out and get Chris Sale, because what a difference he makes. When you get to the postseason, you better not hope you have a guy out there that's going to win. You want to have a guy you know can win, and even though Sale hasn't pitched a lot of postseason games, I wouldn't bet against him at all because he's that good.
How would Jim Palmer pitch to Mookie Betts, and why didn't your Oriole pitchers do this last year?
Well, I mean, you know, we want him to, you know, be second in the MVP rate, so he hit, what, 9 home runs off his 3-1 game, but, you know, he's a marvelous athlete. He's got, you know, it's funny, about 3 years ago, he comes up, June, July, but I still remember a game. And, you know, I think even if you're up in the booth now, you remember, you sit on the bench or you're broadcasting and you see the bat speed, you know, and I think back, I mean, you know, going back to all the, you know, whether it was Yaz, whether it was Rice, whether it was Lynn, Fisk and, all these guys. I mean, when you see bat speed, you see bat speed. And then the fact that, you know, he's a gold glove outfielder, as good as probably any right fielder in baseball. He can steal bases. I mean, he's a five-tool player. And, he's worked hard. He seems to be a very down-to-earth kid. And I don't care if, you know, you're an Oriole all your life like I've been. This is what the game needs. So when you see Mookie Betts and players like that, you know, Benintendi, I mean, they have a lot of young players. I mean, he's not on Mookie's level yet, but he certainly looks like a nice young player. I mean, that's what fuels this game. So, again, you'd like to have him in Oriole uniforms, but that's not the case. But I don't think if you're a purist and you love baseball, how you can look at Mookie Betts and say he's right. I'm going to see Mike Trout, who turned 26 yesterday. You think, I mean, this guy is right up there with Mike Trout. That's how good he is.
All right, Cakes, we got like 3 minutes left, so I am going to do some old guy stuff here in the last 3 minutes. Most innings you pitched in a season?
323 or 4, I think. Something like that, 325. And I think that was two less than Catfish Hunter did that year.
Yeah, so there was a stretch there where that 300 was kind of a regular thing.
Well, it had to be. You know, I mean, that's how you got a $20,000 raise. You know, you had to win 20. I mean, 1 year to get a $15,000 bonus, I had to win 20, win a Cy Young Award, and have an ERA of under 250. So that was the year the ball was more lively. I think it was 77. Ball went 18 feet farther for every 360 feet. So I won 20, had a 291 ERA, and I finished second at the Cy Young voting. And I didn't get the $15,000 bonus.
Perfect. All right, Jim Palmer, two other things that are local angles here. Did you or did you not ever pitch in Pittsfield, Massachusetts?
Oh, yeah, it's where I tore my rotator cuff, trying to throw a high fastball by Billy Conigliaro. And I heard everything pop. I threw two slow curveballs. Of course, you know, the first guy that I faced with the bases loaded, having never given up a grand slam in my career, was Tony C. in Boston when I was 19 in 1965. But I tore my rotator cuff trying to throw a high fastball with a partially torn rotator cuff, and I heard it pop. It was kind of like Rice Krispies. I called Cal Ripken Sr. out, and I said, something just happened. So I spent the winter rehabbing and then came back the next year and actually, won 16 games and led the league in ERA. So Pittsfield. And, of course, that was from where the great Mark Belanger was from.
Yes, and that's the field where the sun sets over the center field wall. It's a very unique thing.
Well, the sun was setting over my career when I was there, Dan. So, so I wasn't really. Yeah, well, that's kind of like Toronto. I used to get in the old park in Toronto. I used to get the glare off the seats, and I figured maybe that would allow me to get out of the first inning later in my career.
Well, you've been great to hang with us so long and talk to us, Jim Palmer. Covering the Orioles and the West Coast in Anaheim, three-time Cy Young Award. If you don't know about them, look them up, young people, and a lot of connections to Boston here.
Yeah, tell them who I used to be, Dan. I would appreciate that.
I will share that when we let you go. Jim, thanks for joining us here in the Baseball Reporters.
Okay, you guys take care.
See you later in the season.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Radio.com.